The call of the muezzin to prayer floated over the city of Agra in the dawn, waking up the residents. The summer heat had made even the nights unbearable, and Abdul Karim was almost relieved to leave his bed. His young bride was still asleep. It was the few tranquil minutes of the morning that he loved. He walked on the terrace, surveying the rooftops of the neighbouring houses. Not far away, he could see the high walls of the central jail where he and his father worked. Soon, all of Agra would be awake and buzzing. The gullies and bazaars full of traders, artisans, tongawalas, and people getting about their work. Cows would stand on the crowded streets, lazily chewing the vegetables from the vendors' carts, and elephants would sway through the narrow lanes carrying their loads of logs, grain, cotton, and carpets to the mandis and factories. As Karim sat down on a mat to pray, the first rays of the sun fell on the Taj Mahal, bathing it in a warm glow as the gentle waters of the Yamuna flowed behind. Further upstream, strategically positioned at a bend in the river, stood the impressive Agra Fort, a towering piece of architecture built in red sandstone by the Mughal Emperor Akbar in the 16th century, when he was at the pinnacle of his glory. Agra was known then as Akbarabad, capital city of the Mughal Empire. Within the walls of the fort lay the history of four generations of the Mughal emperors, tales of war, romance, court intrigues and brutality. It was in the splendour of the Diwan-i-Khas, or the Hall of Private Audience, with its marble columns inlaid with rich gemstones, lapis lazuli, garnet, jade, jasper and carnelian, that Emperor Shah Jahan had received the embassies of William Hawkins and Sir Thomas Rowe, who came seeking permission for the East India Company to trade with India. The English and Dutch subsequently established their factories in Agra. It was in the Jasmine Tower of the fort that the aging Shah Jahan was imprisoned by his son, Aurangzeb, and here that he languished till his dying day, gazing through the tiny prison window at his beloved Taj Mahal, the mausoleum he had built for his queen Mumtaz Mahal. Karim's family had lived in Agra for the last 4 years, enjoying the city's rich Mughal heritage, which was now combined with the spit and polish of British administration. The original family home was in nearby Farrukhabad, in the United Provinces. Karim's father, Haji Waziruddin, had been brought up by his stepfather, Molvi Muhammad Najibuddin, who took care to provide him with a good education. In 1845, Najibuddin was employed as private secretary to an Englishman, William Jay, who was very kind to the family, encouraging young Waziruddin and employing him in his services. From 1856 to 1859, Haji Waziruddin worked in the vaccine department of Agra. In 1861, he received his diploma as hospital assistant and served in the 36th Regiment, North India, from November 1861 to March 1874, working in various cantonment towns in north and central India. It was in Lalitpur cantonment, near Jhansi, that Abdul Karim was born in 1863. Karim was to grow up in an India very different from that of his father, one that was governed directly by the British Crown and not the East India Company. 6 years earlier, the land of his birth had been the principal theatre ground of the Indian Mutiny of 1857. Haji Waziruddin had been an eyewitness to the event that would be described later by Indian nationalists as the First War of Indian Independence. Karim's birthplace near Jhansi was synonymous with the fiery Lakshmibai, the Rani of Jhansi. who had donned battle armour, mounted her faithful steed and led her troops against the forces of the East India Company during the mutiny. Soldiers from the cantonment of Meerut in the United Provinces had taken up arms against their commanders, liberating imprisoned soldiers and killing many English officers. Soon, neighbouring towns of Agra, Cawnpore, modern-day Kanpur, and Gwalior were captured by the mutineers, and the rebels began plotting the downfall of the East India Company. They looked north to Delhi, where the ageing Mughal Emperor Bahadur Shah Zafar still held court in the Red Fort and chose him as their symbolic leader. The 82-year-old, famous more for his ghazals and Urdu poetry than for his statesmanship, declared himself Emperor of India, directly challenging British authority. The rulers from various central and northern Indian states rallied under his name. The mutineers met with initial success, British forces not prepared for the rebellion. The siege of Delhi lasted for nearly 4 months, but on the 21st of September, Delhi fell to the company troops. Bahadur Shah Zafar was given a brief trial and exiled to Rangoon in Burma. The last Mughal emperor and descendant of Tamerlane, leaving Delhi unceremoniously in an ox cart, ending an era of Indian history.